Devidasi Prabhu. She's a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, a scholar. She's behind hermeneutics concept. She's helping us understand heavy subjects in bhakti philosophy. Urmila Devi Prabhu, thank you so much for being with us. We look forward to hearing from you. Let me just start the recording quickly and live stream, and the floor is yours. Hare Krishna.
Recording in progress.
Ma Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vinata Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharani Nirvasesis and Nirvani Bhaskatya Desatarani Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavam Sri Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Sri Panchakalpachubhascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, this is April 30th, 2022, from the Bhakti Center in New York. And we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 3, The Birth of Lord Krishna, Text 24. Shri Devak Yuchu Rupam Yattat Prahur Avyaktamajam Brahma Jatir Nirgunam Nirvikaram Satamatram Nirvisesham Niriham Satvam Shakshad Vishnur Adyatmadipaha. Sri Devaki Uchaha, Sri Devaki said, Rupam, form or substance, Yaktat, because you are the same substance, Prabhu, you are sometimes called, Avyaktam, not perceivable by the material senses. And then, it's funny, Prabhupada does this a couple times, he puts in parentheses, Atashri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Graham Indriya. Adyam, you are the original cause, Brahma, you are known as Brahman, Jyotihi, light, Nirgunam, without material qualities, Nirvikaram, without change, the same form of Vishnu perpetually, Satamatram, the original substance, the cause of everything, Nirvishesham, you are present everywhere as a supersoul, and then Prabhupada also explains here, within the heart of a human being and within the heart of an animal, the same substance is present, Niriham, without material desires, Saha, that supreme person, Twam, your lordship, Sakshat, directly, Vishnuhu, Lord Vishnu, Adhyatma Deepaha, the light for all transcendental knowledge, and Prabhupada has in parentheses, knowing you, one knows everything, Kasmin Nubhagavato, Vignan Sarvam Idam, Vignatam Bhavati. Srila Prabhupada's translation. Sri Devaki said, my dear Lord, there are different Vedas, some of which describe you as unperceivable through words and the mind. Yet you are the origin of the entire cosmic manifestation. You are Brahman, the greatest of everything, full of effulgence like the sun. You have no material cause. You are free from change and deviation, and you have no material desires. Thus the Vedas say that you are the substance. Therefore, my Lord, you are directly the origin of all Vedic statements, and by understanding you, one gradually understands everything. You are different from the light of Brahman and Paramatma, yet you are not different from them. Everything emanates from you. Indeed, you are the cause of all causes, Lord Vishnu, the light of all transcendental knowledge. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Vishnu is the origin of everything, and there is no difference between Lord Vishnu and Lord Krishna, because both of them are Vishnu Tattva. From the Rig Veda, we understand Om Tad Vishnu Padamam Padam. The original substance is the all-pervading Lord Vishnu, who is also Paramatma and the effulgent Brahman. The living entities are also part and parcel of Vishnu, who has different energies, prastya shaktir vividai vishruyute swabhavi Swabhaviki Jnana Bala Kriya Cha, CC Majet 1365 Purport. Vishnu or Krishna is therefore everything. Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita 10.8, Aham Sarvasya Prabhu Mata Sarvam Prabhartite. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. Krishna, therefore, is the original cause of everything. Sarva Karana Karanam, Brahma Samhita 5.1. When Vishnu expands in his all-pervading aspect, we should understand him to be the Nirakara Nirvishesha Brahma Jyoti. Although everything emanates from Krishna, he is ultimately a person. Aham Adir Hi Devanam, Bhagavad Gita 10.2. He is the origin of Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara, and from them, many other demigods have manifested. Krishna therefore says in the Bhagavad Gita 14.27, Brahmanohi Pratistaham, Brahman rests upon me. The Lord also says, Ye pe anya devata bhakta yajante sharanan vitaha, Ye pi mam eva konteya yajanti avidi purvakam. Those who are devotees of other gods and who worship them with faith actually worship only me, O son of Kunti, but they do so in the wrong way, Bhagavad Gita 9.23. There are many persons who worship different demigods, considering all of them to be separate gods, which in fact they are not. The fact is that every demigod and every living entity is part and parcel of Krishna, Mamaivamso Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Bhagavad Gita 15.7. The demigods are also in the category of living entities. They are not separate gods. But men whose knowledge is immature and contaminated by the modes of material nature worship various demigods according to their intelligence. Therefore, they are rebuked in the Bhagavad Gita, Kamas Tastar Ritigyana Prapadyante Nyadevataha, Bhagavad Gita 7.20. Because they are unintelligent and not very advanced and have not properly considered the truth, they take to the worship of various demigods or speculate according to various philosophies such as Mayavada philosophy. Krishna Vishnu is the actual origin of everything. As stated in the Vedas, yasya bhasya sarvam idam bivati. The absolute truth is described later in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.28.15 as satyam jnanam anantam tad brahma jyoti sanatanam. The brahma jyoti is sanatana, eternal, yet it is dependent on Krishna, brahmanohi pratistaham. The Brahma Samhita states that the Lord is all-pervading, Andantarasta Paramanuchayantarastam, Brahma Samhita 5.35. He is within this universe and he is within the atom as Paramatma, Yasya Prabha Prabhavato Jagadanda Koti Koti Svasesha Vasudhari Vibhutibhinam, Brahma Samhita 5.40. Brahman is also not independent of him. Therefore, whatever a philosopher may describe is ultimately Krishna or Lord Vishnu, Sarvakalam idam brahma, panam dhamma, pavitram, paramam bhavam, Bhagavad Gita 10.12. According to different phases of understanding, Lord Vishnu is differently described, but in fact, he is the origin of everything. Because Devaki was an unalloyed devotee, she can understand that the same Lord Vishnu had appeared as her son. Therefore, after the prayers of Vasudev, Devaki offered her prayers. She was very frightened because of her brother's atrocities. Devaki said, My dear Lord, your eternal forms, like Narayana, Lord Rama, Sesha, Varaha, Nisinga, Vamana, Baladeva, and millions of similar incarnations emanating from Vishnu, are described in the Vedic literature as original. You are original because all your forms as incarnations are outside of this material creation. Your form was existing before this cosmic manifestation was created. Your forms are eternal and all-pervading. They are self-effulgent, changeless, and uncontaminated by the material qualities. Such eternal forms are ever cognizant and full of bliss. They are situated in transcendental goodness and are always engaged in different pastimes. You are not limited to a particular form only. Such transcendental eternal forms are self-sufficient. I can understand that you are the Supreme Lord Vishnu. We may conclude, therefore, that Lord Vishnu is everything, although he is also different from everything. This is the Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy. Shidevyakyuchu Rupam Yat Tat Prabhur Avyaktam Adya Brahma Jyotir Nirgunam Nirvikaram Satamatram nirvishesham nidiham satvam sakshat vishnur adhyatma deepaha. Sri Devaki said, "My dear Lord, there are different Vedas, some of which described you as imperceivable through words and the mind. Yet you are the origin of the entire cosmic manifestation. You are Brahman, the greatest of everything, full of effulgence like the sun. You have no material cause. You are free from change and deviation, and you have no material desires. Thus the Vedas say that you are the substance. Therefore, my Lord, you are directly the origin of all Vedic statements, and by understanding you, one gradually understands everything. You are different from the light of Brahman and Paramatma, yet you are not different from them. Everything emanates from you. Indeed, you are the cause of all causes, Lord Vishnu, the light of all transcendental knowledge." So Srila Prabhupada ends this purport after talking about the nature of the Lord, the nature of the Lord's energies, the nature of the Lord's relationship with the demigods and living entities in general, the Brahma Jyoti. He ends by saying the conclusion is Atincha Beda Beda Tattva. So I thought today we'd speak a little bit about Achinta Beta Beta Tattva. And one might say, well, this is all so technical and it's all so complicated, and are we really interested in any of this? However, this understanding of Achinta Beta Beta Tattva, even if we understand it just slightly, revolutionizes everything. And it particularly changes our relationship with other religions, how we view other religions, and to understand how other religions view us. Also, this Achinta Beta Beta Tattva gives us a template, gives us a foundation for a life that's full of spirituality. When I first joined the Hare Krishna movement, one of the main things that attracted me to the movement and made me decide that I wanted to become a member was this concept that everything I was doing, everything I was thinking, everything I was saying could be spiritual. I was looking for something like that from the time I was a very little child, like at least 4 years old. You know, in most religions of the world, worship or spirituality is confined to a certain time of the week or a certain time of the year or a certain time of the day. You know, and most people engage in religion or spirituality, it's like that. You know, I go to church on Christmas and Easter, or I go to the synagogue on Yom Kippur, and, you know, like that. Or I have my meditation time. Okay, I have my, here's my 15 minutes of meditation time or my 2 hours of meditation time, and that's my spirituality. You know, it's often like that. Or else you have on the other extreme people who are like, oh yes, everything is spiritual, God is everywhere. When I was in college, I remember trying to present Krishna consciousness to some of the other students. And I remember one student saying, I don't need to take up a spiritual practice because everything I do is spiritual. He's there smoking. And I said, you know, is your cigarette smoking spiritual? Oh yes, that is also spiritual. So we have, on the one hand, people who generally, they relegate their spirituality to a particular building, a particular time, a particular activity, and the rest of their life they don't see as connected with the Lord, or people who try to just see everything as connected with the Lord and don't engage in any spiritual practice. Achinta Beta Beta Tattva allows us to have focused times of spiritual practice on the form and the name and the qualities of the Lord, and at the same time to understand how the Lord is present everywhere and in everything, and that we can connect everything with Him. And again, this understanding is practical not only for our own spiritual life, but also is crucial to understand other systems of religion, how they may see us, how they relate to us, and how we can relate to them. All right, so we're going to look, first of all, at the problem of pure oneness. Then we're going to look at the problem with pure difference. Then we're going to look at the beauty of Achinta Beta Beta Tattva, And we're going to look at what a Chintabheda Bheda Tattva is not. All right, the problem with pure oneness. So we've already touched on this with my old former college student friend who thought that because God is everything and everything is God and God is everywhere and everywhere is God, that therefore he could smoke cigarettes and be spiritual. Yeah? And this is, of course, a very common misapplication of the idea of pure oneness. And Srila Prabhupada, we know in today's purport, talks about demigod worship. So why is he talking about demigod worship? So people who have an idea of pure oneness also think that all living entities are completely God. And we'll often find, interestingly enough, a conception of pure oneness along with a conception of demigod worship. Why not? You know, if everything is God, and God is everything, and everyone is God, and God is everyone, then I can worship the demigods also. They're also gods. Everything is one. And of course, the problem with this is, how are you going to develop a loving relationship with God? Somebody just, one of my friends just wrote me this morning and asked, is sex really the highest pleasure for everyone? And I said, well, it's not exactly that. It's that everybody wants to love and be loved. That's what everyone wants. Even animals are like that. Honestly, even trees are like that. The trees are loving other trees. Actually, they do. In a natural forest, the trees talk to each other chemically, and they feed each other underground. If you've ever seen a stump in the forest that's still alive after many, many years, how is it alive? It has no trees to nourish itself. It's alive because the other trees are feeding it digested sugars through their roots underground. And so you'll see a stump, even after many, many years, starts to sprout another branch and produce new leaves. How is that possible? It's because the other trees have been feeding it. So this sharing of love is there. And I was saying to her, you know, for many people, they consider a sexual act to be a supreme way of loving and being loved. But what one wants is to love and be loved. Yes. So how do you love and be loved if everything is one? I mean, what are you going to do? You're just going to love the everything? Like Prabhupada, we talked about the universal form. How are you going to love the universal form? You know, it becomes very difficult. If you're just seeing that the universe is the body of God, this has become very popular nowadays, that people refer to God as the universe. Oh, the universe will work it out, you know, right? This is very common in modern spirituality. But how are you going to have a loving relationship with the universe? What does this mean? You know, you're going to embrace all the stars? you know, offer flowers to Alpha Centauri? You know, what the Milky Way is going to talk to you? Yeah. So people who are absorbed only in the oneness tend to fall back into materialism. First of all, they tend to think their materialism is spiritual. They tend to think, you know, their fancy car and their whatever is all spiritual. And they also, because of wanting loving relationships, because of wanting some idea of separateness, I can't have a loving relationship unless there's me and you. If there's just me and me, How is that a loving relationship? I mean, we talk to ourselves sometimes, yes? All of us talk to ourselves sometimes. But is that enough? That we just want to talk to ourselves? You know, maybe we keep a journal and we read our own journal, but is that enough? I mean, even people who live away from other humans, they end up talking to the animals or something. They end up having a relationship with the trees or with the squirrels. Yeah, so this is the problem with the oneness. Now, another problem with the oneness is that, well, we'll get there in a minute. Let's look at problems with the transcendence. So problems with the transcendence is if you have absolute transcendence, there's no connection of anything to God. Everything becomes disconnected. So you have the world and you have God. You have illusion and you have reality. And they have nothing to do with each other at all. You know, you may accept God as the creator of the world, but he has nothing to do with the world. Like sometimes we make something and then we sell it to someone and we forget all about it. Or we give it away to someone and we forget all about it. We don't keep any connection with it. So they see like that. And those who propagate pure transcendence, they bring out a problem with oneness. And here we come to looking at the view of other religions. So I'm sure that all of you know that one of the biggest criticisms of Hindus by Christians and Muslims, particularly, and we could also say by Jews, although they're much smaller in number, is that the Hindus are idolaters. That the Hindus are demigod worshippers and the Hindus are idolaters. So just like in our Krishna consciousness movement, we consider the worst offenders to be the Mayavadis, those who say that Krishna is material and that we can become Krishna. We consider these the worst offenders. So among the Christians, the Muslims, and the Jews, they consider the idolaters to be the worst offenders. And they very much connect this with the concept of oneness. So as I'm sure all of you know, that originally Christianity wasn't a particular church, and then it became the Roman Catholic Church, the Eastern Orthodox Church, and then there was the Protestant Revolution, Protestant Reformation, and the Protestant Reformation, to a large extent, was opposed to the concept of having any idea of form. The Protestants didn't like that the Catholics had Jesus on the cross. They would have a cross without Jesus. They didn't like the idea that the Catholics worshipped Mother Mary. They said this is idolatry. And the Protestant reformers, and the same you find with reformers in Judaism, such as Maimonides, and this has been practically from the beginning of Islam, they say that God is fully transcendent. That God has nothing to do with this world and no form. And we find some of these words in today's verse that Devaki is speaking to the Lord, that she's describing him without, 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 without. You keep finding the word near in the Sanskrit of today's verse. So this was the idea. God is without. That nothing in this world has a connection with him and he has a connection with nothing. So how are you going to practice religion? You know, ideally then, you leave the world entirely. You go to some kind of convent or monastery. You don't talk to anybody. You take a vow of silence, and you simply engage in prayer all day long, because anything you do in the world is disconnected from God. Of course, even then, you have to bathe, and you have to eat, and like that. So they do that just as austerely as possible. Like they'll eat super austere food and they wear super austere clothing and so forth. Because anything with the world is contaminated. Of course, most people can't live a life like that. And so they make some provision for people in general. But still this idea is that one should spend as much time as possible simply in connection with the transcendence. And the main criticism of those who follow the Vedas is this concept that, well, everything is divine. As Prabhupada quotes, I think, twice in today's purport, Sarva Kalam Idam Brahma, that everything is divine. They say, no, everything is not divine. Divine is only separate from everything. They say it is the greatest folly to worship some, you know, statue or painting that man has created. And even greater folly than that is to worship something in the natural world like a mountain. So like our worship of Govardhan, our worship of Govardhan Shilas, our worship of Shalagram Shilas, such people would consider the most primitive, most degraded, and most idolatrous form of religion. That one is seeing the natural world as being divine. Any concept of demigods, you know, concepts that there's a sun god and a moon god, is again ascribing, according to these people of pure transcendence, mistakenly ascribing divinity to what is a mechanical universe. What to speak of seeing that, you know, each river and each mountain has some deity associated with it. So they consider this, that this is highly, highly primitive religion. And that advanced religion only sees a transcendent God. Now, what is very ironic about this criticism of these other religions is that their conception of a transcendent God is, wait for this, impersonal. How interesting. Because they've so much separated the concept of God from anything of this world, that God cannot have any connection with anything of this world, and worshiping anything of this world as divine, or seeing anything of this world as divine, is the greatest heresy and the greatest offense. Therefore, God himself cannot have a form. God himself cannot have a personality. God himself cannot have activities. Because this, according to the absolute transcendence people, is an imposition of something material upon the divine. And so how interesting that when you come to absolute oneness, you come to the Brahma-jyoti, and when you come to absolute transcendence, again you come to the Brahma-jyoti. You know, just like we see in politics, those who are on the far left and those who are on the far right are often very similar, yes? We've experienced that. You know, that like fascism and communism, extreme forms of each give you a dictatorship. It's quite interesting. So absolute transcendence gets you impersonalism, and absolute oneness gets you impersonalism. And in absolute oneness, there's no separate way to love. There's no me and God that I can love. We're all just one. And absolute transcendence, how do I show love? How do I do that? Everything's separate from God. Nothing has a connection with God. How do I show love in my eating? How do I can't. My only connection with God is like scripture and prayer. I have no other way to connect. I can't connect in my daily life. Now, we do see in our Hare Krishna movement that this problem of absolute transcendence does affect our society. We are so trained against impersonalism that we don't generally fall into absolute oneness. Sometimes. Sometimes we'll see people improperly saying things are spiritual that are not. But we do fall into this concept of absolute transcendence. Now, how does that manifest? It manifests when people see their family, their work, their life as not spiritual. And we hear this kind of talk all the time. How can I balance my material and spiritual life? Devotees will ask. It's one of the most common topics that I am asked to speak upon. How do I balance my material and spiritual life? I hear devotees all the time, at least once a week, if not more. You know, my job is Maya. I can't wait till I can quit my job and just read the Bhagavad Gita. My family life is Maya. And we frequently meet devotees, usually men, though sometimes women, who artificially wait and wait and wait and wait and wait to marry because they think marriage is all Maya. You know, and they'll be saying, you'll see these people, they're in their 30s, they're in their 40s, these men, and they want to have long talks with women about their emotional problems, and maybe they're privately breaking the regular principles. But no, I don't want to marry. I don't want to marry. That's Maya. And it's like, well, wait a minute, you know, physically and emotionally, obviously you need a woman. No, that's Maya. Then I will fall from my service. So we run into this over and over and over. Or once people get married, you know, it's still going on. This is not just something that happened in the 80s. You know, we still find people get married and the husband is like, oh, my wife is just Maya. My husband is just Maya. Yeah? So this is this concept of absolute transcendence. That Krishna consciousness is just my japa and kirtan and shastra reading, and everything else is some unfortunate Maya that because I'm so fallen, I have to do it, but what can I do? So what is the beauty of a Chintabheda Bheda Tattva? Those who criticize the Vedic followers for worship of the deity, what to speak of worship of stones, they don't understand the beauty of a Chintabheda Bheda Tattva. And I would suggest that there are many people in our Krishna consciousness movement who also don't understand the beauty of a Chintabheda Bheda Tattva. So that Krishna is everywhere and everything means that we can find the divine in everywhere and in everything. There's a BBT book called Divine Nature about ecology. Why take care of the world if it's not divine nature? Daivyesha Gunamayi, Krishna says. This is my divine nature. Everything is divine. There is nothing that is disconnected from Krishna. There is nothing that is not Krishna, in fact. Everything is Krishna. Krishna is not different from his energies. His energies are not different from him. Therefore, everything is full of life. In the beginning of taking up Krishna consciousness, we make this firm distinction. The body is material, the soul is spiritual. That's necessary. However, even our body is Krishna's energy. Therefore, ultimately, it is also spiritual. Our chairs, our tables, our cars, all inanimate objects are also full of the divine. So I give this example a lot, that just like in our body is made up of living cells. Right? So like my skin, it's made up of living cells, and each of these cells in my skin, they have their own life. They do, they have their own life. They're eating, they're sleeping, they're mating, and they're defending. At the same time, I am there. I am the big soul in the body. So my little skin cell is aware of itself, and I am also aware of it. Both. Then there's also parts of my body that are no longer alive in and of themselves, like my hair. So this part of my hair, there's nothing in there that's alive, but I am aware of my hair. Yes? If you touch my hair, you touch my bun, I'm aware of it. Or the ends, well, I just cut my fingernail, so there's nothing there. But the ends of our fingers, you know, the white part of our fingernail, it's dead. So it's not conscious of itself, but I am conscious of it. So we have beings that are jivas, like you and I. We are conscious of ourselves. We are conscious of our own existence. And Krishna, as the super soul, the Paramatma, is also conscious of us. So I hear my own thoughts and Krishna hears my thoughts. I perceive my actions and Krishna perceives my actions. When it comes to something material, okay, like my phone, we say this is material, my phone has no awareness of its own existence. However, Krishna has an awareness of its existence. Now, I have an awareness of its existence from the outside. I can see it, I can touch it, and of course I can turn it on and do things with it. But Krishna's awareness of it is not exactly limited to that. Because Krishna is also within every atom, as Prabhupada quotes in today's purport, Andantarastha Paramanutayantarastham. So if Krishna is within every atom of this phone, if he pervades this phone as part of his energy, that means when I touch this phone, The phone isn't aware that I'm touching it, but Krishna can feel that I'm touching it. Does everybody follow that? Yes? So if I touch my nose, I'm aware that I'm touching my nose, and Krishna's aware that I'm touching my nose. I can feel it, and he can feel it. If I touch the phone is not feeling it, but Krishna is feeling it. So the distinction between matter and spirit is that matter is not aware of itself, and spirit is aware of itself. But Krishna, as the Supreme Spirit, is aware of everything, and therefore, in that sense, everything is spiritual. Because everything is spiritual, everything has a super consciousness. The universal form is the Lord's material body, and the Lord is fully conscious of everything in that body. He is the soul of the universe. Nice prayers by Queen Kunti in that regard. You are the form of the universe, and you are the soul of the universe. And therefore, our lives can be filled with divinity. That means everything we do, if we do it in the proper consciousness, is a connection with the divine. The definition of Maya is not exactly a thing or an activity. It's a state of consciousness. Krishna defines Maya as whatever you see of value if you see it as being separate from me. So as soon as I see anything as being separate from Krishna, that is Maya. Maya is not the thing. Now we might say, well, why do we prohibit certain activities like intoxication, illicit sex, meat eating, and gambling? If nothing is Maya in and of itself. Well, because certain activities put us in a state of seeing things as separate from Krishna. If I'm engaging in intoxication, illicit sex, meat eating, and gambling, then my ability to see Krishna everywhere becomes impeded. It's not that certain things in and of themselves are Maya. You know, dead animals are not Maya. They're just, when you eat them, you lose your ability to see the divine. Does this make sense to everybody? Yes? And it's not that some certain thing is Maya. It's not like a car is Maya. But if I'm thinking it's my car and I'm enjoying driving fast because I'm the controller, then I've ceased to see things in connection with Krishna. At the same time, Krishna exists separately, transcendentally. At the same time, Krishna has nothing to do with anything of this world, or anything to do with anything. He's Atmarama, he's Aptakama. He's completely neutral and separate. And because of that, we can have a relationship with him. Because of that, I can take the things of the world that are connected with him and I can offer it to him. Because of that, there can be love. I was also answering this devotee who asked me today about whether or not people, everybody sees sex as the highest pleasure. I said, sex is about loving and being loved, and it's also about trying to achieve a chintabheda beta tattva, where there's a oneness between two people, and yet they retain their separate identity. This is ultimately what we're looking for. We're looking for a relationship with somebody where there's complete compatibility, we're completely in sync, and yet we're separate individuals. And that is the beauty of a chintabheda-bheda-tattva. Krishna is me, I am Krishna, Krishna is everything, everything is Krishna, everything is divine, and yet everything is separate. Yet I am not Krishna, and Krishna is not me. I have my own personality, I have my own desires, I have my own activities, and Krishna has his personality and his desires and his activities. And I can have this sense of oneness with Krishna while being separate. How is that? It's inconceivable. Achincha. In this world, we're never fully one with people, nor fully separate from people. And we never feel this satisfaction on the material level. As soon as I feel disconnected from Krishna, as soon as I see things as separate from Krishna, I lose my ability to feel this satisfaction. But as soon as I see things as connected with Krishna, then we actually have this ability to experience this achintya beta beta tattva. And it is completely satisfying. It completely satisfies our sense of union and completely satisfies our sense of individuality, of dependence and of freedom. I was once, when I was traveling, I was staying at the home of a family. I've told this story before. And when I was there, we were preparing to go to the temple, and the husband and wife got into an argument about who was going to change the baby's diaper before we went to the temple. So, you know, you change the diaper. No, you change the diaper. And they were arguing about this. And then, anyway, it was unpleasant to be there. And the wife storms out of the room, and the husband is looking all crestfallen. And he spontaneously said to me, "You know, I'm scared that if I just do what my wife wants, I'll lose my freedom. And if I don't do what she wants, I'll lose my relationship." And I thought, this is what we want. Both relationship and freedom. Both connection and individuality. That's Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Connection and individuality. Relationship and freedom. Both. And we don't have to choose. We don't have to say, I just want a relationship and I give up my freedom, or I keep my freedom and therefore I don't have relationship. No, we have both. Absolute freedom and absolute relationship. So this is Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Now we could talk about this a lot longer. There's a wonderful book by, two places I would recommend is first a wonderful book by Prabhupada's godbrother O.B.L. Kapoor on the philosophy and religion of Sri Chaitanya. And in chapter 11, he goes into admittedly an intellectual, philosophical, technical discussion of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva in terms of all the different Indian sampradayas. But it's a little difficult to read, but it's really well worth it. Another book that I'd highly recommend if you're interested is by David Haberman, who's an academic scholar and also an initiated devotee in the Ballabha Sampradaya. And he's written a book called Loving Stones, which is about the worship of Govardhan. And he has an extensive chapter about how particularly the Christians were persecuting the Hindus for idolatry. And this view of the Protestant Christians against idolatrous persons, and with the concept of extreme transcend, their concept of extreme transcendence, and their complete condemnation of the concept of oneness, of the concept of immanence. So, what is Achintya Bheda Bheda not? Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva is not a way of explaining all unexplainable things. So in my introduction, it was said that how I was involved with the Shastric, I am involved with the Shastric Advisory Council in teaching hermeneutics. Hermeneutics is the system by which one understands the statements of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra in general, but especially dealing with difficult statements or statements that appear to be contradictory. And Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva is not your, it's just all Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Okay, well, over here in the scripture it says this, and over here in the scripture it says this. These things appear to contradict each other. What do we do about things that are apparently contradiction? Oh, Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. That's not what it means. Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva does not mean that anything that appears to be confusing, difficult, contradictory, mutually exclusive, paradoxical, is all explained. Well, it's simultaneously and inconceivably the same and different. No, that's not what it means at all. Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva means the Lord and his expansions, the Lord and the jivas, the Lord and the world, the jivas and each other, the jivas and the world. That all these things are simultaneously divine and in oneness and separate and individual. That's what it means. So that should be understood very clearly. All right, so we looked at the problem with just pure oneness, the problem with just pure transcendence, the beauty of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, how we don't apply Achintya Bheda, Veda Veda Tattva. And from this we can understand the unfortunate position of religions that take a position of absolute oneness or absolute transcendence, that they really cut themselves off not only from interfaith dialogue, real interfaith understanding, but they also cut themselves off from the richness of spiritual life. And if we understand these things properly, our own life will be full of divinity and at the same time full of an individual relationship of love with the Lord. So we can stop here. We have just a few minutes for questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements. Okay.
Shastik, we do have a chastisement.
Oh, never. I was just going to ask, you have the two categories of absolute oneness and absolute transcendence. And we have in the prana mantras, nirvishesha, which means impersonalism, and shunyavadi, which means voidism. So which of the two of those are related? Are they kind of the same, or how do they, are they in some separate category?
Thank you. I'm very glad you brought that up. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, both are discussing certain types of absolute oneness. So, Srila Prabhupada definitely felt that one of the main problems was this concept of absolute oneness. Now, do keep in mind that Srila Prabhupada was coming from India, and the problem of absolute transcendence wasn't very dominant within India. I mean, there's a few groups in India that have taken up the cause of absolute transcendence, and all of them admit to being strongly influenced by Protestant Christianity. So Srila Prabhupada saw that the main difficulty with Krishna Bhakti was concepts of absolute oneness. Frankly, for those of us in predominantly Protestant countries or from a Protestant, Islamic, or Jewish background, absolute transcendence is also a problem. But also keep in mind that absolute transcendence ends up with impersonalism. And this, I found, especially reading this in David Haberman's book, I found this amazing. If you take transcendence to the ultimate degree, you end up also with impersonalism. So impersonalism applies to, you know, oneness gone amok and transcendence gone amok. They both take you away from personality. It's kind of like a circle where you end up at the same place, although you appear to be going in opposite directions. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you. Where does voidism fit into those two concepts?
Voidism is a form of absolute oneness. There, you have no distinction. I mean, it's also, you could say, a form of absolute transcendence. Nothing is divine.
Well, it's the ultimate impersonalism, right? Voidism.
It is. It is. That if you take absolute transcendence to its ultimate point, that nothing is divine, then you end up with nothing. You know, absolute transcendence is nothing is divine except God. Only God is divine. Nothing else is divine. And God, in an absolute transcendent way, has nothing that can be related to the world, like form and personality. And if you take this nothing is divine and no form and no nothing, 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 you end up with nothing, nothing, nothing. And if you take the everything is divine, everything is one, everything is one, you just end up with this one thing, which can also end up with just this voidism. We might say that voidism is becoming one of the most popular spiritual philosophies and practices on the planet today. So that it's in the West and in the East, Buddhist concepts are really taking over the concepts of of meditation, concepts of philosophy. It's pretty interesting that we're dealing, I would say, you know, the main, for lack of a better word, spiritual competition we have in the marketplace today is Buddhism. Thank you. I'm so glad you asked that. Anybody else? Yes. By the way, thank you for your wonderful singing in the beginning with the guitar. It was wonderful.
Romila Devi, what is OBL Kapoor? Why is his name like that? OBL.
I don't remember. I think that's his legal name. Like we say AC Bhaktivedanta Swami. I think it's like that. And he's one of Prabhupada's godbrothers. I have that book as PDF, by the way. It's a little hard to
PDF by OBL.
Yeah, I have that book. And I also made a PDF just of chapter 11, which is about Achintyabheda Beta Tattva. Srila Prabhupada really liked that book. He was very pleased with it. And he said that it should be distributed widely in his International Society for Krishna Consciousness. That never happened. I don't know why, but it didn't happen. Srila Prabhupada gave a specific instruction that all of our temples should be distributing that book. It just never actually transpired.
Okay. Well, it's okay. Adipurusha Prabhu, unmute yourself. You're muted, Adipurusha Prabhu. Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, there we go. And again, thank you for your wonderful guitar playing in the beginning. It was just so inspirational.
Okay. We're just trying to glorify Krishna, glorify the public. So, amazing class. You made a really super important point about how everybody has an inclination to love and be loved. I was in the Boston Temple and I came outside to the vehicle to get my Japa beads, and there was this homeless man on the street, and there was a washing machine somebody had thrown out there on the sidewalk, and he looked at me with a dhoti and shaved head, and he bowed down to the washing machine and said, "Bow down, this is God." I was trying to respond to that. I guess it's sort of right, maybe at least he's talking about God. But Krishna works in such a curious way. It says, Prabhupada tells us, he reserves the right not to reveal himself to anyone and everyone. So Krishna conceals himself when we're envious and we don't want to see him and we're not interested in a loving exchange and we're just trying to make ourselves the center. But Krishna's so wonderful that when we have a desire for that relationship and we express that by desire, reaching out and looking for him, then he reveals himself. And now we can actually perceive that everything is coming from Krishna and he's loving us. The people don't see, we don't see sometimes that Krishna loves us. And we talk about love of God, but sometimes we forget the fact that Krishna loves us. And then it says in the Bhagavad Gita that when you see that, then you want to serve Krishna.
Yes.
You want to reciprocate with that.
Thank you. That is also part, I mean, if you think about both this absolute oneness and absolute transcendence, they remove that. Each of them removes it. Absolute oneness removes this sense that God loves me because there isn't a God to love me exactly. You know, everything's God, so where is the God to love me when I'm loved by the clouds? I mean, that kind of love isn't doable. You can't do anything with it.
It's vague, yeah.
It's too vague.
Like you said, you couldn't interrupt the universal form.
Yeah, so, how are you going to do that? And you can't feel that it's loving you. You know, and with absolute transcendence, God is so transcendent, how is he going to love you? He's so separate from you.
Right.
And you'll
so
find
Krishna gives us that choice.
You'll find these religions with absolute transcendence, they usually talk about God as being kind of cruel. right?
Mm. Yeah.
Believe in him or eternally burn in a lake of fire. You know, it's like, whoa. Talk about an abusive parent. You'd get arrested.
Umila Devi, I have a question. To follow up on what Adipurusha Prabhu and you were discussing just now, in our tradition, we seem to be emphasizing so much how we're envious and we're in this material world because we're envious, and Krishna is Atmarama, he's self-satisfied, he never leaves Vrindavan. And are there any verses or scriptural references that are illustrating how Krishna loves us? Because, you know, he's self-satisfied. What does he need us for? Where do we fit in? Is there any Shastric?
Oh, yeah, many. You know, the verse at the end of chapter 5 in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, "Ad suridam sarvabhutanam, su rid." Rid is the heart, su is dear. That Krishna is very dear to the heart of every living entity. And there's so many verses where Krishna says, "I am the friend who I don't envy anyone, I don't have any favorites, but yet I am a friend to everyone." So this is a recurring theme throughout the Shastra. That's loved.
Right.
Yes.
That's right. We are loved.
And that is real love. You know, in illusion, when I'm loving, frankly, it's not real love, because I think I need something from you. I'm feeling some lack because I'm in illusion. I don't see Krishna everywhere. So I'm feeling some lack. And I'm coming to you because I want you to fill some lack in me. So that's not real love, because I want something. I'm loving what I think you can do for me. At least there's some degree of that. With Krishna, because he's Atmarama and Abdakama, because he doesn't need anything, therefore, he can love simply to love. That is actual love. He loves.
That is so profound.
You know, he loves us for no reason other than that he loves us. He has nothing to get from us. And when we are filled with that love, then we have nothing to get from anybody either. And we can also love with complete freedom. There's no strings attached. There's no agenda. You know, that's a material. In someone in material consciousness actually can't do that, because material consciousness means I see things as separate from God. And when I see things as separate from God, I'm so small and I'm so insignificant that I'm in great need of so many things, you know, subtly and grossly. And therefore, I cannot approach anything or anybody without some motive, because I feel I have to have. But if I'm filled with love, I can. So now we're going to greet the deities?
Yes, it's 8 o'clock. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.